Fans, if you're up in the Bodega Bay area, don't forget about the Tides Wharf restaurant. Now, it's closed for in-house dining. We know that. But outdoor dining is available, and Gene Bugatto does a great job of keeping everything clean up there and mandating the masks and everything else that has to go on. And, of course, the inn at the Tides is open as well. So it is the fish season. It is salmon season, the fish market, the places that you go up at Bodega Bay, the gift shop, and all the things we love about Bodega Bay are there for us. Wear your mask, wash your hands, socially distant. Gene takes care of all that for everybody up in Bodega Bay. So absolutely, absolutely check it out. All right, joining us now is Mark Simon, Sports Info Solutions, as we like to call him, Mark A. Simon Says on Twitter. Mark, how are you tonight?
I'm good. How are you?
Well, very good. And here we go. You know, the Toronto Blue Jays are looking for a home as we speak right now. That is something that maybe was anticipated. It looked like it was going to work out, and now it didn't. And is this something that's of significance to you just in getting this season started?
It was certainly an interesting wrench, and you figure that probably for the next 4 or 5 days, there's going to be little wrenches that are going to get thrown into the season, whatever that may be. I guess it sounds like they're going to wind up in Buffalo, and everything I remember about the Mets' experience with Buffalo as their Triple-A team, there were a lot of negatives tossed around on both sides with regards to the facilities and things of that sort, and I guess the awkwardness of it. Plus, you're uprooting an entire team that now basically forces its players to be away from their families, which is, I think, pretty significant. As I said, I think this is just the beginning. I have a feeling there's a couple more wrenches coming before we get started.
Okay, I'm glad to throw that one at you as we start our discussion tonight with Mark Simon. A couple of things about the Giants. We've talked about it on the show, and it's been in the news out here quite a bit. What they're going to do at catcher, and does Joey Bart make this team? Do they bring him up after 5 games so he doesn't lose a year of his eligibility for free agency? You know, the Chris Bryant story. What do you think is going to happen with the Giants' catchers and what can happen here?
Well, it was funny. I was trying to look at it earlier, and it felt to me, if you remember, what was it, like left field last year before Yastrzemski, that they just kept trotting guys out. And I have a feeling almost that the guy that's going to do the majority of the catching for them is maybe not even on the team right now, just that someone will pop up as a potential guy. Or maybe Tyler Heineman gets hot like Mike Yastrzemski did and shows that he can play right away, which I think is asking a lot. It doesn't sound like they're going to risk playing Bart at this point. And I don't necessarily see a scenario where that comes to be, despite the fact that like every guy on the roster seems to think that he would be like their best or second best hitter right now if they put him in. I just don't think that this is the year that they feel good about doing that.
Well, you know, it's interesting because, of course, you're part of Sports Info Solutions, and the numbers that you use are always so interesting. Is there any way in the world you can predict the 10 playoff teams? At least we have 10 now. and if they renegotiate to 16, who knows? But is there any way in the world, as this thing gets underway, and I realize we're a few days away from the beginning, you want to give me your 10 or you want to take a shot at it? And I don't know how you're
sure.
going to base it, but go ahead.
All right. So I'm going to start in the American League. And I feel like the American League, if you go, like, I feel like there are 5 chalk there with the Yankees, the Rays, the Twins, the Astros, and the A's, which is essentially duplicating 2019. But I think if you look at the rosters, and you look, like, I looked at the bullpens a lot, and I went with bullpens that I, for the most part, felt comfortable with. I feel like those are your 5 best. If there's someone that's going to sneak in, I think the White Sox are a reasonable team to expect to sneak in. The Indians certainly are reasonable. I think I'm losing a little confidence in the Red Sox, knowing that Evaldi is their opening day pitcher. And then the Angels, like, I feel like the Angels have, like, the widest swing. Like the Angels, if everything went right, could win like 35-36. But I also feel like if Pujols hits 230 and their starting pitching depth gets hit right away and guys get hurt, that they could win 22-23. So I think they're an interesting team in this, and I could see a scenario in which they did make the playoffs. But for now, I would go with the five chalk in the American League. National League, I think that the Dodgers are clearly the best team in the National League. I think I would have said that over 162. I'll say that over 60. I think it'll bear out. I think the second best team in the National League is the Braves. Again, just looking at the roster and the lineup top to bottom, and the starting pitching, Fried and Soroka, and the bullpen with Melanson, and they really have like three or four different guys who could close. I would take the Cubs in the Central. I wanted to take the Cardinals, but I couldn't bring myself to do it. And then I felt like the Brewers and the Reds just had holes in their pitching staffs, whether it was the starters or the bullpen and the Reds. The Reds are kind of like the White Sox. They're like the most likely of the non-playoff teams, I think, that could tug their way in. The Nationals should be good. The Mets are that volatile team that could be 25. They could be 35. I feel like the Padres are too, particularly because they have the lineup, but I think their starting pitching is a little shaky at this point. So, all right, National League, I got to pick five. I will go Braves, Cubs, Dodgers, Cardinals and Nationals at this point. But with the National League, I feel like there are 12 teams that could legitimately make it. And by Wednesday, I could have something completely different.
Okay, well you have to see who lasts for the season. We just don't know who's going to make, God forbid, you know, there's some outbreak and all that. That's the big part. But, all right, but look, we'll put you on the spot early on before any of this stuff happens. I like the Reds. I think Castellanos is going to go nuts in that ballpark. And I think he's going to be the MVP of the league. How about that?
I like that. When you talk about like sleeper MVP picks, sometimes people will go with someone who finished in the top five once. Nick Castellanos is perfect because I don't even know that he's even gotten an MVP vote, but he has the capability, as we saw last year, to be an explosive hitter. And if he could do that for 60 games and hit like 340 with 18 home runs, he certainly could play a role in the MVP race.
All right. I like that one. All right. Mark A. Simon says on Twitter, Mark Simon, Sports Info Solutions, we've got anniversaries this weekend. Sunday is the 60th anniversary of Juan Marichal's debut. Very famous one-hitter against the Phillies, and Clay Dalrymple got that as a pinch hit with two out in the eighth inning. Also, the anniversary of John McGraw's first game as manager. Now that goes back a long, long, long ways, but we could talk a little Marichal. I remember his debut, and of course Hobie Landreth caught him that day, and it was in 1960, and here comes Juan Marichal, his debut, one walk, 12 strikeouts, and wins the game 2-0 over the Phillies, 7 2/3 no-hit innings. How about that?
Yeah, I think you could make a case that that's one of the top 10 San Francisco Giants pitching performances of all time. And someone like Brisby might be able to do that a little better than I do it. But you put like the Kane perfect game and Lincecum's no hitters up there. But the Marichal debut, historically, statistically, is pretty impressive. I liked, so I went and looked at like the newspaper coverage at the time, as I usually do when we do these things. I thought it was really cool that on the cover of the San Francisco Examiner, they had a picture, a really big picture of the leg kick, because that made an immediate, really big impression upon everybody that day. One other tidbit, I guess, to go with it. After the game, at the time, Juan Marichal didn't speak particularly good English. His translator after the game was Orlando Cepeda.
Ah, interesting. I didn't know that. Okay, very good.
Yeah. And one other, too. Before the game, I guess the Giants had been in a little funk. Horace Stoneham visited the team before the game and was, like, yelling at them. It was like, instead of, like, the manager yelling at the players, it was the owner of the team yelling at the players before the game. I guess he motivated them pretty well that day.
Hmm. And Hobie Landreth was the catcher.
Yes, Hobie Landreth, who I know best as hitting a walk-off home run, the first walk-off home run in the history of the Mets against Warren Spahn, the Hall of Famer, in the Polo Grounds. And it was admittedly everyone acknowledged that it was a pretty cheap home run. I don't know if he would say to that. John McGraw, by the way, I think the biggest thing for him from that managerial debut, he made it through the game. He was ejected 121 times in his career.
Well, not as many as Bobby Cox or Earl Weaver.
Yep. Yeah. That you throw that out there. Redshirt Sheet actually just put on its website, they have every ejection that they've ever been able to record, and it's thousands, like 18,000 ejections, and I'm just starting to sift through it and look through. Like, Barry Bonds was the most ejected Giants player. That was the one tidbit that I got. I think Jeff Kent and Bill Madlock were second.
Ah, interesting. Very interesting. I didn't know that. All right. Today is the 50th anniversary. I can't believe it's 50 years of Willie Mays getting his 3,000th hit off of Mike Wegner of the Montreal Expos. How about that?
Yeah. So a couple of things stood out from reading up on that. And again, I acknowledge I'm 45. I didn't live through these things, but I like reading about the history and kind of redocumenting it after the fact. Willie, after the game, was just kind of like, this is a good accomplishment. The bigger thing was trying to win the game. Maybe in 3 or 4 days, I'll get excited by it. And a couple of signs of the times. The Giants owners gave Willie's son, Michael, a 4-year college scholarship after the game. The scholarship was valued at $3,000 per year, which I imagine was pretty good for college back then. Wouldn't get you very far. Now, and the other thing that was funny, I thought, was after the game, instead of like phone calls and stuff, he received many congratulatory telegrams.
Huh. Well, you know, it's funny. Michael may be in town, and hopefully he's listening tonight. I enjoy talking to Michael whenever he's here. Boy, great report. Very interesting. I can't wait for next week to talk with you to see where
games.
We are. And where things are and what the games feel like and the TV and radio and noise and who knows, pitching performances and pitch counts. And you're going to be very busy this week, hopefully, if everything goes well. But I appreciate you being on. Great report.
Yep. Looking forward to it. Dave and John have put us to work again this year. So we are looking forward to supplying the Giants broadcast with some fun information over the course
beautiful,
of the season.
Beautiful. Look forward to talking to you next weekend. Thanks, Mark.
Great. See you, Marty.
Okay. All right. That is Mark A. Simon Says on Twitter. Mark Simon, Sports Info Solutions. More coming up. KMBR 680-1045, the sports leader.